day, and welcome to another episode from MuseTech.net. I'm Joe Pisano, along with our good friend Darren Morton. Say hello, Darren.
Hello, Darren.
And it's good to be back. We've taken a little bit of time off, both working on a tremendous amount of projects this summer. A lot of people think that when college is out, you know, we're just out gallivanting and doing whatever we want. But the truth is that there's a lot of work to be done. And for Darren, being in charge of multiple studios and multiple audio and, dare I say, even some video things on our campus, you've been quite busy getting a lot of gear in, out, troubleshooting, and deciding what's better and what needs replaced and some of the future things to look at. So I think we're going to talk a little bit about that today. But first, I wanted to direct you to our website. We actually have two of them. The main one is MuseTech.net. That's MUSTECH.net. And, of course, our podcast can be found there, but also can be found at Podomatic.com, where we actually host our podcast shows. And it's Podomatic. I'm sorry, it's MuseTech.Podomatic, PODOMATIC.com. And you can actually get to either site by visiting either site. There are links on both of them.
That makes sense.
Yeah, well, you know, we try and make things convenient for people. So one of the things I'd like to start out with is share some of the things that we're going to be doing with our podcast. Darren and I both decided that we'd like to commit to some type of monthly podcast rather than kind of our sporadic. And a lot of people ask me, when's the next episode coming out? We haven't podcasted for about 3 or 4 months. So I've been getting the question, well, are you guys still doing your podcast? Well, absolutely. We are doing our podcast, as you can see by or hear by actually listening to this show today. But we're going to try and put out a show the second Monday of every month. So we're going to commit to that during the school year, which means we'll get at least eight shows in this year. And hopefully with good things. I'd like to bring in a lot of different folks who have been asking to be on our show. Apparently we're very popular. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Very popular. On Podomatic, we of all the educational and technology show listings, we are consistently number one or number two over the time, not just every week.
Oh my. It's,
yeah, over time. So we get between 100 to 200, sometimes 300 people a week that download this. And I'd love to hear from some of you because, man, you know, when you can look at the country chart and we're just being downloaded everywhere. And you know, people are enjoying the podcast shows and some people comment. But if you ever have something to say or an idea for a show, let us know. We'd love to hear.
We'll take them.
From you. So why don't we just segue into what we're going to do today. Darren, why don't you give us a little bit of an idea on some of the projects, not all of them because I know there's too many, but some of the things that you've been working on over the summer that might be of interest to the folks on the podcast.
Well, one of the more interesting things I did this summer was I was sent off to Crestron School. That's C-R-E-S-T-R-O-N. What Crestron is a control system that is utilized with touch panels and media equipment. If you walk into what people generically term as a smart classroom, chances are the control system that's running the touch panel and all the equipment is going to be either Amex or Crestron.
So it's not an electronic toothbrushing type lab place?
No, not
normally. No, this is a little bit different, a little bit more complicated.
Just a bit more.
Just a bit more. All right. So now at one point, though, wasn't like when you think of the control pads and different things, you think AMX. So is it a competitor of AMX or does it allow you to do more with that?
AMX and Crestron kind of have equal footing. It depends on the vendor you're working with. Vendors are either AMX or they're Crestron certified. There are vendors that will surf between the two, but they're ultimately aligned with one or the other primarily. But those are the two big players.
So this is like going off to like geek school to learn how to like massively control things.
Oh, yeah. And, so, and it's wonderful stuff. Once you get into it, the programming is semi-intuitive, but you have to be able to learn to use the tools. And by learning to use the tools, I mean about 10 different software suites. For the most part, you'll concentrate on two, but still, there's a lot involved with it. And specifically, we have on the campus quite a few Crestron systems.
Yes, we do. Every podium has Crestron applications and hardware built in.
And that's similar to any other institution of higher education. And in the high schools are getting more media savvy, and you're seeing more and more of these control systems. And I'm not saying that everyone should go out and learn how to program Crestron or an AMX system, but it would help you to familiarize yourself with them.
Especially for troubleshooting. You know, those type of things. Goodness, yeah. Something as simple as maybe even changing a password on the system. You have to go in, you have to load the program up, and you know, for some of you that don't know what some of these things are, Crestron, in my mind, is a way to make things that are fairly complicated, that involve a lot of switching, turning different things on, connecting one piece of hardware to another, like an audio-video type of connection between things, mm-hmm. and allows you to do it with either a click or a touchpad type push. And in a sense, it kind of dumbs things down a little bit, but it makes you a lot more, the user of it, a lot more efficient.
Indeed, and everyone has had an experience where they've walked into either a home system or they've walked into a classroom, and on the podium there's five different remote controls.
Oh, you know what? The remote control thing is an ongoing. I can tell you, at least once a week, someone will ask me something about something as simple as their cable television. Mm-hmm. You know, they have three remotes, and is this supposed to be on, or how do I know what power thing to hit? And you know, the Crestron basically allows you to sequence things so that no matter what device, what brand it is, you can with one button, you can drop down the projector, turn on the projector, kick on the right sequence for the audio gear, and make something active, like either the PC computer or the CD or DVD player.
Mm-hmm. And you can take a whole bunch of steps, like you're saying, and condense them down into one button push. And that button push can be on an electromechanical type panel with actual physical buttons on it, or it can be on a touch panel-based system. Touch panels are nice, especially if you're working with somebody who writes code and does a nice job with the touch panels. They can be both attractive and yet very easy to navigate. And when you think about all the different control protocols and you think of all the different signals you're dealing with, walking into a technology-ready room, you really need some way to condense everything down into a simple user interface. Because
absolutely,
how many people have you talked to in your life who have had an experience where they've walked into a classroom and something doesn't work?
Oh.
And it basically screws up the lesson. And
it does.
You lose time from your class, and then you also have that losing face thing because mm-hmm. – And God help you if you're teaching a technology class and the technology itself doesn't work.
You know, story of my life. Story of my life. I love one of the questions that I've shared with you before is on my final. One of the questions, it's a true or false question. It's usually, you know, question 100 or whatever the end is that technology works 100% of the time, especially in my music technology classes. And, of course, you know, it's a big fat F for false on that. But what you're talking about is true. A lot of time the tech folks, even the Crestron folks that program these things, they're unsung heroes in that, you know, a lot of know-how, smarts it goes into making a seamless integration into the end user of a classroom. Mm-hmm. Most teachers and professors or anyone, business folks that go into these, you know, they hit the button and the stuff works.
Yep.
When you think about all the things that have to happen to sequence those events and to get the right things routed to the right place, it actually is a marvel how simple it is with this technology. Mm-hmm. So you feel like you're ready to make things simple now. You have it all down.
Well, I've been working on a smaller system over in our student union, so we seem to have the programming down on it. And as a matter of fact, I've spent most of the last couple of days doing the hard stuff. That's the cabling and the wiring and making sure it's all plugged in together, because if you don't do that, you ain't not got nothing when you're done.
You don't have nothing, and the teachers don't got nothing either. It's hard to move forward when things don't work. That's for sure. It's unbelievable how reliant we are on technologies.
Mm-hmm.
Even for me, if the internet connection is down, and I'm dealing with a class that's heavily Web 2.0 or based upon you know, the functioning of that internet connection, you really have to scramble to make up what you're going to do during that class in some way. You can talk about it, but it's really unbelievable how reliant we are upon these technologies now. And you have to be fluid, because if something doesn't work, one of the things that always amazes me in my MIDI lab, I have 18 stations. Each station is an exact clone. It's the same computer. It's the same hardware, literally imaged from one machine to another. And yet I'll have 18 different things that happen or don't happen. You know, one computer's not working, or the audio's not working, or the video's not switching. And it's unbelievable, because it's no different.
Yep.
And then, you know, and they always go, well, you have 18 different users. Sure you do. But, you know, you try and minimize that. But it is a constant learning process, and it makes us become better teachers in a sense, because you really have to know what you're talking about. Not only do you have to know your materials, but you have to be fluid in your use of the technologies that help you to teach the class better, to either make your students learn better or to make yourself a better teacher or to give them an opportunity through technology that they just can't get any other way. Mm-hmm. And because of that, the teachers now have to have quite a bit of technical savviness. Now, they don't have to program Crestron, but they need to know what you've done to it to make it work.
And with a Crestron or an AMX system, I mean, there's a premium that comes with that. If you are just putting a projector up in a room and putting a DVD player on it, you know, that's something the average person in a maintenance department or, you know, buildings
AV, or electrics,
they can do. But when you're talking about utilizing that with a computer and you have maybe a video conferencing set up and whatever else, there's a premium to be paid because you have programming involved and whatever else. But like I said, it saves you time. You walk into the classroom, you push one button, the screen comes down, the projector turns on, the computer powers up, the DVD player turns on. It all is simplified. You will pay for that privilege, but in the long run, it will save everyone who uses that system time and streamline it. And this will sound really silly, but the room itself just looks cool.
It does. The Crestron unit that we have in our recital hall, when you press that button and you look up at the ceiling, which looks perfectly integrated with all the other things that are beautiful in there, and then down starts to come this high-tech piece of gear that's holding the LCD projector, and you know, the other things come on. It definitely high-tech, and you know what? Kids are interested in that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, students, they walk into a room, they know, okay, they're, you know, now the question is, do we use the technologies? Yeah. And you know what? That's an interesting debate that's going on right now inside the classrooms is the students have access to such incredible technology, Wi-Fi, internet connections. These things are available everywhere. And so now you have teachers that are fighting with these technologies. They're dealing with students that are IMing in the classroom or, you know, they're looking up, double-checking you at Wikipedia, dare I say Wikipedia, in an educational aspect. I'm not anti-Wikipedia. As a matter of fact, I think some of the things on there are fantastic. Mm-hmm. I wish Encyclopedia Britannica, I know that that's an educational source, but it's not exactly educational in the sense of a peer-reviewed journal. I'd like to see more of these sources free and available. One thing that allowing technology use in my class that has changed me is I have to be prepared for the questions that come along with that. I might be doing a class on jazz history talking about Miles Davis. I'm going along my sequence spiel thing, and someone says, well, what about this? And how do they know that? Because they just double-checked what I said, online. And I'll tell you the truth, I'm all right with that. I like to engage the students in that type of conversation in class. You know, okay, let's talk about what you found. Let's talk about that and whether I believe it's true or not, or how does it integrate into what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about a free-for-all, but one thing we do deal with today is the generation that is now, the under 20-year-olds, under 25-year-olds. These people are tapped into an incredible amount of information, and our job is, and their job is, to figure out how to utilize it, make it work for them, and to discern good information from bad information. Yeah. Because for every good piece of information that is really useful on the internet, there's going to be 5, 10, 100 pieces of marginal information on there, or information that's not actually accurate. So we need to make our students, whatever subject, be able to discern good information from bad information on the net. So that's a little bit long way from Crestron, but why don't you tell us about some of the other stuff you've been working on? I know you've been working on the broadcast studio. We talked a little bit about that in our last podcast, but it's up and running, ready to go over there.
Oh, yeah.
In addition to that, you built a green room, video green room right next to it, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that we've got to get the lighting correct on that. And for those of you not sure what we're talking about, if you've you've watched the news and you've seen the weather guy standing in front of the weather wall, and he obviously is not standing in front of large maps. He's standing in front of a wall that's either chroma key blue or chroma key green, and a device is keying or projecting that image from the computer onto the background that's being mixed into the camera level. And so we put one of those in for our video production folks, and one of the things we're working on right now is getting the lighting correct on that, because lighting is a big issue.
If you have a dark spot, it's not going to key it out.
Yep, and the colors will change, and what you end up with is tearing edges around the people. And I think everyone has seen videos from the 80s and the late 70s.
Especially sci-fis.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Where you see really bad keying effects, they're called. And you see all kinds of nasty stuff going on where the edges are – somebody has blonde hair and their hair is actually kind of a red color because mm-hmm. of the shadow around it. Good lighting fixes that. But we're looking – the lighting system we're looking at using is, believe it or not, a fluorescent-based technology. Several companies that make it. It has the ability to project a very even, consistent light at about a third the wattage requirement of a normal quartz light bulb. And you have control of over dimming and all the features you'd have with a normal quartz light, but it you have all the tremendous energy savings, and plus there's no heat. And if you've ever...
Which, right, they're not melting in front of it then.
Exactly.
Right.
That's one of the big considerations when putting a video production suite in is how are you going to cool it? You know, if you're going to have some computers, they'll generate a little bit of heat. But how do you control the lighting? When you have the lighting going full bore, those things consume a lot of energy and
Absolutely.
They make a lot of heat. The fluorescent light technology really has come a long ways. It's now comparative in cost to quartz lighting.
Okay.
But the energy savings is amazing. And like I said, there is no heat. And
wow.
Because it is so efficient, whereas quartz light, you'd say you'd have a couple 1K fixtures, and you'd be lucky to get those on one outlet without blowing a breaker somewhere. We can light up that entire green wall with five of these fluorescent fixtures and still not be pulling
the 1K.
Yeah, 12 amps maybe.
Unbelievable. So you can be in the green room, you can be in the green business
mm-hmm.
As well. That is
pretty
awesome. Now, at one time, you've done a lot of actual of industrial type of production and not consumer, but you worked for WKBN and some of these other professional radio stations. And at one point you had talked about a different kind of lighting. You said fluorescent. It started with a V.
Yeah, well, I was probably talking about a product specific called Videscent.
Okay, Videscent lighting. Is this a similar technology?
Yes.
Is that a quartz-based technology?
Nope, it is a fluorescent.
Okay.
Videscent was one of the big players early on in the fixture business.
Okay.
So, and now several companies are making fluorescent fixtures for studios.
So it's based on the same technology, but
mm-hmm.
not a brand,
Correct.
Per se. Okay. Because I know that we've had this conversation before, and sometimes in our conversations I begin to mix things together,
mm-hmm.
but that's pretty exciting because I know when we do some of our green technology, we'll bring in the old Fresnels,
mm-hmm.
trying to get things spread. If you've ever seen some of the clips of this, these Fresnels can a lot of times you'll see a light fixture and it looks like barn doors on the front of them to control some of the lighting. But our weakest Fresnel as far as power is 300 watts,
mm-hmm.
and it produces a tremendous amount of heat. And as you say, if we put four of those together, we're at over a kilowatt
mm-hmm.
of power on there, and it really does get hot.
Oh yeah,
on the stage. So that's pretty interesting. Another thing you have to think about when you're doing this, because
mm-hmm.
green screens are actually becoming fairly common. I know, for instance, if you buy the new version, and I'm not trying to promote any particular product, just an example. If you buy the new version of Pinnacle.
Mm-hmm.
Pinnacle Studio version 12 actually comes with a 6x8 green sheet.
Oh my!
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Chroma key
mm-hmm.
green. It's in the package. You know, you can pin it up. You can hang it anywhere. And they have a number of advanced keying options
mm-hmm.
in the standard versions that allow you to remove the background and put, as you said, put whatever you want behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So the technology is not just for the professionals anymore.
Yeah.
The schools can use this. They probably
mm-hmm.
already are using it, depending upon where they're at. Home users can use this. A lot of photography now, where you would go in and they'd have that scroll. They'd scroll in the background of the bookcase. They'd scroll in the background of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You would see the picture. Now they just put you in front of a green screen, and then they can put you on the beach,
right.
in the space, or wherever you want.
And that's what we're doing with the video lab. We're using virtual sets. Our lab environment, we don't have that much space to give up to it, so we can't put in a traditional set where you'd have a desk maybe and a bunch of chairs. And normally in a TV or a production studio, you'd have, like Joe was talking about, pieces of furniture that wheel in and wheel out depending on what you want the shot to be comprised of. We don't have that space. But we can put a virtual set together for, well, next to nothing, comparatively speaking.
Right.
And we can key in. We can get a professional graphics package that has whatever kind of set we can imagine in it. And we can key it in. And if we do the lighting correctly, The technology is so good that it looks absolutely fine.
Which is actually a pretty amazing technology when you think about it. When you see any of these folks from Fox News or CNN or that are out in the satellite, that they're, you know, either they may not actually be a satellite uplink anymore. It could be any kind of technology. But all of, you know, behind them is the beautiful flag, mm-hmm. or the beautiful, you know, all that, you think they're actually in Washington because behind them is the Capitol building or whatever. That's what they're using to do these things. It's really, like you said, it's a no-brainer. Put a green screen up behind it, get all of your audio, get all of your video, and then decide later what you want to put behind it.
And the technology is available to the masses now. It's common. It's available. If you're setting up a high school media lab, like I said, the traditional studios are expensive to build. You have lighting concerns. You have to learn lighting and all. But if you set up a green screen or blue screen, one of two colors, take your pick. And maybe you can color coordinate with your room.
Color coordinate, absolutely. Yeah, but don't do a blue and a green screen at the same time.
No, that would nice pinstripes.
Right. You know, actually, one of the cool things, you don't actually see this done in music so much, but it would be pretty awesome to take a string quartet and actually record them in front of a green screen and put some different graphics behind them. You know, even musically, you can do some pretty creative things mm-hmm. with that. Now, granted, you could go in front of the green screen. What's the acoustics of the room? Who knows?
Yeah.
But as you said, some of these green screens are very low cost. Some of them are free if you get the products. But you can actually put them up anywhere.
Yeah, they have scrims that literally fold down to about a 12 by 12 size box. They're in a polyvinyl tubing structure that goes around them. And when you open it up and you unfold the thing, it opens up and it's 6 foot by 6 foot or whatever.
Totally portable.
Completely and utterly.
Just take it wherever you want. And the great thing about green screens, a lot of people that don't understand this is they think, well, I need a special camera. Not true.
Not anymore.
You can almost any camera that has some clear optics and has good CCDs, mm-hmm. you're going to be able to remove that green screen from the background and put in what you want.
And the tools are available too in the software nowadays. Even the lowest cost entry level video editing software, the tools are in there so that if you do have like a lighting issue, you can go back in and using the tools, you can clean up the edges,
right.
And you can really make for a nice looking shot.
And actually, you know, that technology is not hard. It's called masking technology. You decide, you can actually outline exactly what you want to keep, and you can decide to either omit it or retain it. It's just like drawing a stick figure. You draw over the outline that you want, and a lot of times someone may have the perfect outfit on, but they're wearing a green pin. Mm-hmm. And when you film them, the green pin gets keyed out. And you can actually just go put a circle around that and say, I want to retain this and keep it. It's not crazy hard technology to use. So, you know, if you're interested in that technology, it's out there. People are using it, and I know we use it.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to be using it a lot more now that we actually have a place for it
mm-hmm.
on campus. So, well, last thing I want to talk about is maybe some of the upcoming shows. We didn't want to make this too long, but we wanted to say hello, let you know we're live. Mm-hmm. We're well. We're still thinking about how we can integrate technology in any type of educational setting to make you a better teacher or to make your students better learners or give them opportunities that they can't get without it. But I know one of the things I'm really excited about is I just purchased a number of Zoom H4 Next recorders.
And they are very cool.
I'm telling you, you know, there are a lot of these handheld recorders out there, and many of them are great products, but I have yet to see a product like this Zoom H4N recorder. The quality of it is unbelievable. The ability to change your recording spread from a 90 degree to 120 degree spread. It has built-in multi-track ability. It has the ability to record four channels at once.
Mm.
Has phantom power, 24 volt and 48 volt.
Very important.
Exactly. Allows
XLR
you,
inputs too. Actual XLR inputs.
Yeah. So it has professional audio inputs on it. It's so exciting. I've already been using it for a number of things. One of the great things that we still deal with in the marching band world is if we want to put out a recording to the kids so that they can hear what it is before the actual band gets here, we're left with the old Jensen LPs or you know, the cassettes that were out there. And
mm-hmm.
One of the things that this device easily does, and other devices like it, is I can just jack into the headphone out. of the LP player, the record player, the cassette deck, auto level it. It automatically records it to either an MP3 or whatever. The USB connection you just connected to your computer, it's automatically recognized, and it just opens up like a card reader. So I just drag and drop what I want out of it onto the desktop or wherever I'm working with it, and I have instant access. I don't have to copy it to one of the things I used to do. And this is a little bit longer, but I'm gonna stop. Is I used to take those things and dump them to a CD player. Mm-hmm. We had CD recorders, which then meant, you know, I had to have the piece of gear. I had to record it to the CD. I had to finalize the CD, take the CD over to where I was, rip the CD, had all these extra steps. Now I don't have any of those steps, and it fits in the palm of my hand. So I'm pretty excited about that. And one cool feature about it is it has the new audio IF features, which allows you to connect it to any computer, and it becomes a source itself, meaning that it becomes your podcast mic, or you can record directly to Adobe Audition, or you can record to Goldwave, or you could record to Pro Tools directly from that device, and it doesn't require, if you're using the Windows platform, any extra drivers. It's automatically recognized. Totally cool product, and we're going to talk about it. It uses stereo microphone techniques, which is something we're going to go into fairly in depth on the next podcast. Yep. So that people understand that you can make phenomenal recordings with a stereo mic pair.
Literally, a band director can, 10 minutes before his band concert, walk out, screw this thing on top of a mic stand.
And it comes with a mic stand adapter.
Right on the bottom of it.
Right.
Hit the record button, walk up, conduct your show, go back afterwards, shut it off, and suddenly you have your entire band concert recorded at an excellent level of fidelity.
Excellent.
You have it already in either MP3 or WAV file, and you can dump it directly into your computer.
Right.
And you can do whatever you want with it.
No muss, no fuss. Records directly to SD cards.
No cables.
No cables. The standard mode on that battery alkaline's 7 to 8 hours. And if you put in what they call stamina mode, which means you record basically at 44.116 standard CD quality, it'll record for 11 hours on 2 AA batteries.
Now, there's a concert I don't want to attend.
No, me either. As a matter of fact, I've been to some concerts that seemed that long.
I think I was at a wedding that way.
All right. Well, hey, it's time for us to go, but we wanted to get reacquainted with you. We also wanted to let you know, drop by. Send us a line. Send us an email. Musetech.net, MUSTECH.net. It's one of the most popular music education, and technology sites on the web. Our podcast is part of that. It's something we believe we need to do. We're available on iTunes. We're available we're everywhere.
Yep.
So everywhere you want to be, that's where we are.
You're ubiquitous.
Something like that.
Yeah.
but anyways, just letting you know that we're going to try and do this every month while we're in school session, so we get a lot more out. And you can also plan for the next podcast. So for now and always, I'm Joe Pizzano.
I'm Darren Morton.
And we'll catch you next time.